What is The Vanguard? The introductory speech from Nomos Birmingham, March 26th, 2022. And if you guys don't know what Nomos Events is, that is our events vertical. We have unfortunately been unable to do them within the last year, but this was the first speech from the, I would say, rather successful Nomos Birmingham in March 2022. We had some good people there. We had SD Wicket and Alexander Adams and Mr. Panama Hat. It was a lovely event. So do watch out. We will hopefully be announcing something in the future in that regard. Without our attendees, there is no community. Without community, there will never be the vanguard group that native Brits need if they wish to survive. To Lenin, the vanguard, or a vanguard party as he saw it, had only one sole purpose. To quote, to establish a dictatorship of the proletariat, a rule of the working class, the change of the ruling class, from the bourgeoisie to the proletariat, makes possible the full development of socialism. End quote. Now, whilst many of us will balk at the idea of class consciousness among the proletariat, or what is laughably claimed as full or real socialism, we must recognise the power of such a statement to those who are already inculcated with radical Marxist thought. Lenin may have held some downright evil and misguided ideas. He was, however, no fool when it came to understanding power and the necessities for social change. The Vanguard Party was never going to constitute the entirety of the working class, nor did Lenin have any interest in making it do so. He knew all too well that a cadre of Marxist elites had to represent the proletariat, for the masses themselves could never be organized as a whole. Some of the early Bolshevik meetings in the late 19th century took place with as little as 24 members with a handful of revolvers shared amongst them. They planned and consciously saw themselves as a force which could change the world. And, to some extent, they did achieve this. The democratic age of the 20th century was in many ways defined by Leninist and later social democratic thought, where the money from Wall Street and the help of Western intelligence agencies helped in this process is an issue for another time. But one must recognise that there would have been no Bolshevism, no October Revolution, and possibly no USSR without the pre-existing radical thought of Lenin and his vanguard. This should be of little surprise to us, yet many disregard vanguardism, and so too do they disregard radicalism, even when it comes from ostensibly their own group, politically, ethically, or economically. To the tone of the revolutionary, racist, fascist, and the like, vanguard groups find themselves consistently under the ire. Maybe this very phenomenon shows the true power and subsequent hesitancy around vanguardism. Even those of a politically engaged disposition are terrified at the thought of their own class becoming conscious. The strangeness to us of such language is, in its own way, a sign of the desperate need for our very own vanguard. It is verboten to be part of, or even think of as good, any group which could raise the consciousness of native Brits to a level whereby they begin to recognise the struggle that we all face in kind. To hold on to radical yet traditional thinking of what constitutes Britain, its people, its culture, and its order is to separate oneself from polite modern society, to make a stand and say that Britain and its people should not be bent out of shape to fit modernity. Instead, the modern world must be bent to fit the British continuation of both people and values. Unless the course of such a continuation is made entirely unfeasible by modernity, in which case modernity itself must be rejected wholesale. It is to step outside the bounds of the pragmatism that is all too familiar within political discourse. It is to think of what is truly best for Britain, its people, and to reject the managerial regime with its scientistic bun fight of numbers, facts and studies that boggle and paralyze the masses. One can only represent the mass properly by feel. by communicating to fellow initiates and by the necessary end goal of an intensely existential struggle, and to ask the very simple yet often overlooked question, is this in our interest? To quote, the only reason for vanguardism is for the elite to protect the mass and seek to bring it forward in history, because the mass can never act by itself. Jonathan Bowden. For the masses do not have the time, the will, the education, nor the diligence to fully grasp the crisis facing Western and consequently British civilization. Much like the proletariat of the late 19th century had no interest in Marxist ideology, even if they were lucky enough to be able to read. It is only when the self-interested goals of any individual are disputed by some facet of the crisis facing us all that they even dare to peer behind the curtain. For most, it is normally too late in life to make an attempt to halt and overturn the erosion they find. This is by no means a mistake or accident. The ties of family, career, mortgage, and the like are a fantastic prophylactic against radical thinking and organization. That is, if the individual doesn't flee and cower upon first bearing witness to the nature of the task at hand, be that from the sheer overwhelming scale of the crisis or the direct threats upon those who are willing to identify that crisis, especially publicly. The mass is indeed conscious, but only at a lower level where each individual amidst it feels alone, powerless and voiceless in his own singular struggle. To quote, to explain correctly the present state of affairs is the great task of the agitator, Mao Zedong. This sensation of feeling alone, despite recognizing a group you belong to or identify with, is the condition of modern man. Interpersonal connections are forced, literally through the case of civil rights. They are asinine, purely material, or even purely immaterial as modern technology allows. The rapid expansion of cities required the destruction of the old world with its towns, villages, and dwellings. So too went its ways of organization, be they churches, guilds, local government, and militias, to name a few. And thus, the faceless masses were born. A proportion of society that can never quite be quantified, but always remains present enough to reflect the centrality of modern social organization. And, of course, to organize such a mass, one needs propaganda. No longer can it be said that the majority of British cultural products are an organic representation of British values or people. There is only the shallow puddle of mass media. For Lenin, too, recognized that the national newspaper in and of itself performed and functioned as mass organization. A single media outlet which could talk to the whole nation at once and yet speak separately to each and every individual on his own as a representative of that mass. In the words of Jack Ellul, this is the situation of the lonely crowd, or of isolation within the mass, which is a natural product of present-day society and which is both used and deepened by mass media. End quote. Ellul also recognized the need to destroy what he called small groups in order to make propaganda effective in its totality. To quote, only when very small groups are thus annihilated, when the individual finds no more defences, no equilibrium, no resistance exercised by the group to which he belongs, does total action by propaganda become possible. Hence why having our own small group, our vanguard, is so important. It is vital to the survival of Britain, not just to counter the low-hanging fruit of left-wing journalism or to shift the Tory party vote by a marginal percentage, but to counter the very concept of modern parliamentarianism when it is no longer reflective of our interests, and to stand against the progressivism that is propagated from all sides. Even those who stand and are said to be speaking from a place of tradition do so only meekly, as they are all too ensconced in the milieu of presently orientated thought. Only small and ultimately radical groups that can maintain their radicalism through the test of time could ever begin to speak of tradition in any sense that is true. To be traditional is to be radical. It is only that true connection to tradition and heritage which will help quell the condition of the lonely crowd, the atomized mass man. A connection to assist in understanding their position amongst their own kind, not just through the dissemination of ideas in media, but through action itself. In this sense, we can create behaviours which make possible the full development of traditionalism. For those of you who were present at our previous event in Manchester, you may recall the passage from Julius Evola used within my speech. To quote, "The opposition between modern civilization and traditional ones may be summarized as follows. Modern civilizations devour space, whereas traditional civilizations devour time." End quote. It seems all too obvious that a group, especially one that devotes itself to the radical adherence of traditional ideas, need not consume money, energy, or space, but must instead consume time. This, I feel, is our greatest challenge. The perfect strategy, the correct narrative or type of artistry will be in vain if we cannot create an air of permanency. Expand your time horizons and lower your time preference. We, as the vanguard, must be able to stand the tide of modernity and refuse to move with its flow, even when it appears to be in a relative state of ebbing. Within this, one can truly begin to delve into what makes the vanguard so special. It is not the content of ideologies, strategies, or principles, but it is the very attitude with which each member approaches organization. The persistence and radicalism of the vanguard will not be born through adherence to the avenues of rationalism, pragmatism, or ideology. Rather, sentiments like heroism, myth, and authenticity will propel the vanguard through time and into the position needed for the raising of consciousness and a changeover of the ruling class. It will do so because its heroism, its mythos, and its glory will be grounded in the realism that no quantity of spreadsheets, databases, or polling could ever reach. Each and every one of us here recognizes that it is down to us, and only us, to take on the impossible and remold it into the possible. Yet, one can only do this if one is willing to fail, which is a sentiment I see many misrepresent. It is a belief held by a worrying number of our allies on the right that the possibility of failure itself is enough reason to give up hope. However, I feel that this provides us with a fantastic opportunity to gatekeep and develop the aforementioned attitudes that are all too crucial to vanguardism. One must not wait around or expect to be handed victory. One must be willing to take it, by any means necessary. And we'll end here with a quick quote by Thomas Carlyle. "Who is he that says always, there is a lion in the way? Sluggard, thou must slay the lion then. The way has to be travelled." Thank you for listening. As I said in the intro, that was a speech from March 2022. So, God, I'd like to credit Evelyn for being quite far ahead of the curve on some of this stuff. For I think that many are only prepared for these kind of concepts and this kind of speech now. Very brave of her to deliver that 2 years ago at a live event. So, kudos. And if you want to hear more hard-hitting, ahead-of-the-curve stuff, do watch out for our Nomos events. If you want to support us, though, do like the video or drop a comment. You can help us out by becoming a member of the YouTube channel. You can become a subscriber on the Substack, where this is also in text form, or you can donate via the Ko-fi link. Thank you guys for listening, and have a good evening.